Don't tell me that. Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. And I've asked Katharina to come up and tell us a joke.
Katharina, alcoholic. Okay, so how can you tell that two alcoholics are on their second date? A moving truck is pulling up in front of their halfway house.
It's funny because it's true.
I'm sorry. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Matt. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation. So please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that make noise that will distract others. Take this time to get connected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away and ask God to help you. Stay focused on the step study tonight. Is everybody ready? If so, let's start the meditation. Fog light prayer, if you don't know it, it's up here on the screen. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light, so those whom are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. There is a solution from the Big Book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked Kat to come read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it is kind of important to know what one is.
Spiritual Experience. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God conscious, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think that this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God conscious. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance and belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep in man an everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer.
Thank you. Thank you. Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane or meeting mode, or just turn it off. I mean, I get it. If you need to talk or text, just please step outside as to not distract others around you that would like to be here and need to be here. I think Peter's on his 10th session, I believe. And all I can say is I hope you have a bucket of ice water sitting next to you, because it's fire. Welcome, Peter.
My name is Peter, recovered alcoholic. Grateful to be alive and sober and part of a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's one of those nights where I have no clue what's going to happen, and I don't know how much is in the tank tonight, but we'll see. June 23rd, 1988 was my separation from alcohol, and I'm very grateful for that date. Quite frankly, that date is now more important to me than my own birth date, which is in July. I get more excited about June 23rd showing up each year than July 14th. I'm grateful I have both. But especially the older I get, but there's something happens around that day where it's one of gratitude and reflection, and you get inspired to keep moving forward. Thank the group for having me back, not only for this series, but another series to be here and get to share with all of you, and quite frankly, giving me so much latitude to speak freely. I'm very grateful for that. We talk about step 10, and it says we've entered the world of the spirit. It doesn't happen to me by just going to meetings, and it doesn't happen to me by just having a sponsor or even reading the big book. What I learned a long time ago was about studying the book and having an experience with the book, where the book becomes who I be, becomes internalized. I don't look at the book like a novel and read it from cover to cover and expect anything different to happen other than gaining knowledge. And at the very same time, I can't be so militant about it where I become not flexible. because then I'm just as dangerous with that as I am without any information. And I need to be able to read a drunk and hear a drunk and how to approach that. The thing I've learned about entering the world of the Spirit, for me, it's always about trying to live from the soul rather than the mind. This whole walk is not a walk of self-help. We can't do it with cognitive thinking, but it's done with an awakened spirit. It's a soul walk, a soulful walk. And what I need to do is continue to nourish that. In June of 88, man, if I heard me talking, I might as well be talking in Latin because I didn't get any of it. And the only thing that kept me coming back was my desperation to get better and wanting so desperately what the speaker had or what some of the elders in the meetings had, because they seemed to be walking different. I was just sharing this with someone the other day where there was something about their deportment shouted they were men and women with the real answer. There was something about the walk, something about the talk, how they handle life, and life is a world of impermanence. It's problematic. It's unfair. There's disappointments. There's highs and lows. It's volatile. But they seem to be doing this walk differently than what I was accustomed to experiencing, even in my own life. And that was attractive to me, especially when I saw men and women outside the halls of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, in the diner, or in their homes, with all the stuff that goes on in a home, how they handle it. And it wasn't being apathetic about anything. They're very passionate, very involved with what they were doing, but their walk was different. And what I learned later on and got to experience in my own journey was it was a walk of the soul. And when we talk about entering the world of the Spirit experientially, can I talk about what it's like to enter the world of the Spirit and what that's like? I am very grateful that on most days God has closed the ears to my mind and opened up the ears to my heart or my soul. When I'm not practicing step 10, when I'm not doing the daily disciplines that the book suggests I do, I begin to run into me wherever I go. I run into the self. I've talked about that last week. That other guy, the illness guy, the disease guy, the disease mind. And I'm in conflict with everyone and everything, even though everything's fine. I run into me wherever I go. And I start to lose contact with that power that is. I start to forget about living in harmony with that power that I'm supposed to be back with. Because what the steps do is drive out self-will, and we enter the world of the Spirit, and we find ourselves living in harmony with this power that created us in the first place. And when I'm running into me, I'm not. I got to put on my AA game face and pretend I'm spiritual. I start to run into me and lose contact with this power, and I keep searching. So I double up on meetings. I write more inventory. I read more literature, but nothing's happening because I'm no longer surrendering and I've risen above my own alcoholism. So the great thing about step 10, it's about more pruning of the tree for me. I have been faced, like I'm sure many of us, with lots of adversity, and my relationship with God shouldn't hinge on adversity or prosperity. Like when things are good, I feel spiritual. And when things aren't, God doesn't love me, so I'm doing my own thing. And I really got to see where I was in the spiritual world when things weren't going good, when there was no money. It's easy to be grateful for a banquet. It's easy to be grateful for a pocket full of money and feel really connected. It's easy to be grateful when you got the new car, the new house, a new relationship, and everything's in a honeymoon phase, and really God really loves me. But can I be grateful when there is no banquet, when there is no money in the pocket and the cupboard's bare? Can I still be grateful for being above ground, sucking air, and sober? See, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous in 1988, living out of the trash bag, basically. I had nothing in 1988. I was homeless in 1988. I was living in an abandoned building in 1988. There was nothing. And what they asked me to do in step 3 is live on terms other than my own. And I get into Alcoholics Anonymous, and if you're chopping wood and carrying water, you'll get employed. And it's interesting, when you get a job, something happens to you at the end of the week. They give you money. Like a lot of new guys say, I want to get money. Go get a job. They pay you for doing that. You show up, you get paid. And if you save some of it, you find yourself being able to buy a new pair of sneakers, a nice set of clothes. You can get a haircut. You can do things like those other people. And what happens along the way, you get the little AA romance going. And then you get the AA car. And you get stuff. And you get the cell phone. Oh, you got to get a vape the size of this big book. Look like you're walking around in London half the time. So. And then you're spiritual at that point. And then we start to go along this journey, and sometimes things happen where you lose the job or the money gets tight. I've been near bankruptcy, almost filed for bankruptcy. You know, you get the divorce and she takes everything. Everything means everything. You know, you go to your ATM and it says insufficient funds. And she's driving a new car. You say, how'd this happen? And suddenly worldly things become paramount. That stuff is really important to me. I need to be open to everything and attached to nothing. And when we start to accumulate stuff, I forget what it was like when I came in here, where when I was able to buy myself breakfast, it was like hit the lottery. I'm buying myself a breakfast. Now we're around here a little while, and I'm losing, I don't have as much money maybe. I don't have as much clothes, and suddenly it's the end of the world, and I forget about that. And all that it showed me over and over again, my attachments to external conditions, believing that was going to make me who I be on the inside. That's what validated me. My money, my car, my possessions, anything external. What type of popularity, what type of prestige, what type of reputation I think I've earned myself in Alcoholics Anonymous. I want my rightful place in AA and out there. And the way God gives, he takes. And he will take when it's in the way of you and me and him. And I forget about that stuff, what it was like living in an abandoned building, and suddenly I can't have that much money in the bank, but I got enough to keep the lights on. It should be okay. I was in an abandoned building. No, I need one house. I need two houses. I need one car. I need two cars. I got one pair of shoes. I need 20 pair of shoes. And it goes on and on and on. And all that stuff does is allow me to justify inappropriate behavior and spending and make it very appropriate. Unspiritual behavior, in my mind, becomes spiritual. And little by slowly, I start to drift away from that power that got me sober in the first place. On June 23rd, 1988, my plea to God was, take me from this. I don't want to die. And perhaps 10 or 15 or 20 years later, well, that's passed. Please give me that car or I'm going to die. Please don't let him or her leave because I'm going to die. I mean, the things that go on. And the great thing about writing inventory and sharing it, a solitary self-appraisal is insufficient, step five tells me. The thing about writing inventory is not Rolodexing it. I got a bunch of inventory and then I put it away. Or I have a bunch of inventory and I share it and I do nothing about it. The idea of inventory for me has always been another sense of surrender and submission. And a force feeding of humility. This is how I've been today. This is how I've been this past week. Continuing to take this inventory. It's really interesting that my book gives me inventory in 4. My book gives me inventory in 10. My big book gives me inventory in 11. I think it's important that I continue to prune the tree because the ego's dying to break out. And it will, and I won't even know when it breaks out. Little subtle ways. Things get more important. I start to make decisions for myself. I start to drive. I'm no longer living in spirit. I'm no longer living in inspiration. And I'm no longer inspired. I'm running on self-will. And if you confront me, I will push back. It's usually the red flag about where I'm at, where we are at. So what I do with step 10, there's some things we've been working with for a longer time in my lineage, and there's buzzwords like turn, watch, wear, and observe. Turn in order to go out. If I don't turn in, I will go without. Constantly turning in. And that doesn't mean self-observation all day long, because I'm no use to you when I do that. But gauging, where am I? How's my speech? How's my actions? How am I doing? Am I coming from the soul or am I coming from the head? Because I'm coming from the head, it's all about me, and you're running into me and not the spirit. Now, I can't will myself to do this stuff. I'm going to be spiritual today. It's not going to happen. In fact, anyone who claims a spiritual isn't. There's a great quote that I love. Woe to the man so possessed that he thinks he possesses God. As soon as I tell you I'm spiritual, I'm probably egotistical. As soon as I think I got my hands on spirituality, I just lost it. But it's the chopping wood and carrying wood. It's the seeking. It's the walking. It's the looking. It's the searching. It's the mystery. In that place, I've arrived. But as soon as I say I have this, I've kicked back and I stop doing work and the ego starts to wake up. And then who you're talking to is not me, but you're talking to ego. You're talking to pride. You're talking to many forms of self. And I think I'm going okay, and you're saying, what's wrong with him? So turn, watch, aware, and observe. Turn, watch, aware, and observe are buzzwords we work with. And I've always written inventory. What I do at my sponsor is on Monday nights, for example, that's our call time. Now, we speak here and there during the week. If I haven't immediately, if I just want to talk to him about something, sometimes just, hey, how's it going? But Monday night is work night. And Monday night at 7 o'clock, I call up my sponsor. And what I have is written inventory in front of me, what Mickey calls my 10 steps. And that is how I've been doing all week, how I've been doing for the last few days. I don't leave anything to my mind. That's the way I was brought up. I don't run an inventory in my head. And by working with disciplines of putting it to paper in discussion and prayer, what has happened is the GPS gets better. So when I'm turning in order to go out, I can hear me. I go, that was ego, just I need to make amends. This person is a little bit off today. I need to proceed with caution. And it goes on and on. So I'm in less collision with people, places, and things. I get to look at, on paper, my hidden motives, my little agendas, and we all got them, right? The new guy wants to go to the meeting down the block rather than to the meeting in the Salvation Army. Well, it's a good meeting. I like the speakers. And no, she's there. That's why you're going. Everyone goes out after the meeting. That's why I'm going. Hidden agenda. Right? How come, let me just share this. How come we hear one-year anniversaries a lot, and then you don't hear so many twos, and then you don't hear so many threes, then you hear a five, and then you don't even hear six and sevens? What happens? Well, maybe they were an alcoholic. What happens to a lot? They get into relationships, they get married, have kids, and they don't need AA anymore. And that was the agenda, perhaps, why they're here in the first place, to meet people, be around people, get into a relationship, build a house with the white picket fence. I don't need to do inventory. I don't need to do these daily disciplines. I got her, she's got me, vice versa, and off we go. So I come and I gate crash a meeting once in a while. Anniversaries aren't that important until you wind up in detox again. The great thing about experiencing desperation in June of 1988, it was the thing that turned the car over, the catalyst. The pilot light got turned on for me in June of 88, where I screwed up all the time, making a million mistakes, but I kept getting back in the saddle because I knew I needed to ride, because if I didn't, I was going to die. And I kept showing up in the wretch I was, in the language I had when I first got here, inappropriate often. Didn't dress properly, but I kept coming back. And because I kept coming back purely out of desperation, the elders schooled me in here on how to talk, how to behave around women, and how to dress for an AA meeting. They were taking my inventory because I was incapable of doing that. I grew up, you take everyone else's inventory. What a great force feeding of humility to sit down with God and a piece of paper and write down where I am at fault today, where I missed the mark today, where I fell short today, and further, who I need to make amends to for my screw-ups today. And it's not necessarily rip someone off. I was inappropriate. I barked at someone today. I embellished a whole bunch on a story. I lied today. That becomes plaque on the soul. And if it isn't stripped down little by slowly, I start to drift away from that power that already is, believing I'm the power. So what I do is, on awakening, the 11th step says, we turn to God. Be divorced from self-pity. Pause throughout the day. But what happens to me? What's my GPS for the day? And step 10 really talks about this, but there's a condition. Before I enter the world of the spirit, I need to be cleaning up amends. Because I can't enter the world of the spirit if I have a ton of amends out there that I'm not making. This is so key. Because in step 10 it says, this thought, and the thought that they're referring to is as I'm cleaning up amends. So if I have 100 approaches I need to make, and I only made 10, and then I'm going to tell you enter the world of the spirit, and I got 90 hanging out, I haven't entered the world of the spirit. I delude myself into thinking I'm spiritual when I'm really not. But if I'm out there chopping wood and carrying water, seeking people, making phone calls, writing letters, whatever needs to be done, whether I can reach them or not, Well, my book says I've entered the world of the Spirit. Perhaps I have. But I don't get free room and board. That I learned. I'm not going to get free room and board in 10 and 11. It's about growing and understanding and effectiveness, enhancing this gift that I was given freely. I didn't pay for this. I don't pay for Alcoholics Anonymous like you do when you're in treatment or your therapist. I come here for fun and for free. If I don't have money put in a basket, the basket keeps going. The only pain that it was a price to pay was the pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, that kind of pain. But that was self-will run riot. That's a result of me running the show. So I come in here and they tell me how to get better. And I begin to go through this work. And step 10 has some incredible stuff. It says, step 10 is like a page and a half of information telling me how to grow with this power called God. The power that brought me in here, the power that's keeping me sober. How do I grow closer to it? Getting the grace of God doesn't mean I'm spiritually fit. You know, we say, but for the grace of God, but for the grace of God. There's a big difference between getting the grace of God and experiencing that power which is giving me grace. And while I have grace, God's grace, it doesn't mean I'm spiritually fit. I'm just getting a gift that I didn't earn. Because God doesn't have stepchildren. But what am I doing with this gift? My whole life centers in recovery. And I speak for myself because without recovery, I'm drunk. See, I'm not going to tell you I'll start acting out. Because that implies it's a long way before a drink. Without recovery, without God, without Alcoholics Anonymous, I am drunk. That I'm convinced of as sure as I know I'm standing here. That's also in the soul. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. I can never transcend this. We can transcend worldly things, but never alcoholism. And the thing about alcoholism, it seems to flourish when I'm sober. It seems to be worse when I'm sober unless I get God. And when you're around here a while, you can spot spiritually fit people and you can spot spiritually bankrupt people, even though we're sober. You can just hear it. You can see it. You can hear it in the language from the podium. I know some guys out there give a great message. They drop more F-bombs than a guy with 2 days back. Well, what's going on there? You can talk to me about God all you want. When you're dropping F-bombs in the podium, you're being disrespectful to AA and to the women in the room. I think you need to find a new God because you are God. My step 10 tells me this, that I continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. That's cleaning up amends. Step 10 is like 4 through 9. Continue, watch, next, at once, launched, vigorously. All these words imply action. Nowhere in my book does it say hang out a while. You just got your 90-day chip. You're good to go. You know, you're tired. You don't need to do anything. I need some time off. You know, I never, ever, ever had a day off when I was active. There was no such thing. And I come into recovery and say, I need time off. Hey, you know the other thing I've learned? I work in a business that's, thank God I work with God a lot, because the business I'm in, you know, you want to put a nuclear bomb under your chair some mornings. But the things that have happened to me in recovery, the volatile things that have happened, the betrayals that have happened, the gossiping towards me that's happened, the health scares and the loss of loved ones that's happened, it pales in comparison to the hell experienced at the hands of a bottle of whiskey. Day after day after day after day, where I have no morals, I have no respect, and I quite frankly don't care about anything, including myself. And the daily humiliations and degradations to keep that thing going, where I will do anything at any price to get a drink, and I'll figure it out tomorrow. And you toss and turns, I can't believe I did, fill in the blank. And then I come into recovery, and there's disappointments, there's betrayals, there's gossip, there's lots of stuff. Pales in comparison, because I'm sober and I got God, and I will get through that compared to what I did at my own hands. I think last week I shared, Jesus once said, love your enemies. And I start looking around for who they were until I looked in the mirror and I was faced with the enemy, me. That's the guy I fear more than anything, that other guy. And what my inventory allows me to do is continue to prune the tree to grow in understanding and effectiveness. When I'm rid of self, I get free. When I'm willing to live on terms other than my own, I get free. When I don't want to do that, I live on my own terms. When I'm full of self-will, I get in trouble. I start to have fear show up. Resentment start to accumulate. And I'm wondering what's wrong with you, not with me. It says, we vigorously commence this way of living as I clean up the past. So as I'm cleaning up my amends, I begin this way of living. I've been given some spiritual fitness here. I'm in spiritually good shape. I've been working out in the AA gym, the spiritual gym, in order for me to cross the threshold into the world of the spirit. And to think about the world of the spirit, nothing makes sense. See, my mind wants logic. 1 and 1 equals 2. Got it. But in the world of the spirit, nothing makes sense. The whole spiritual journey that I'm on, that we're on, doesn't make sense to a mind. How do people like us become pillars of our community? Why would God give such a sacred message to another drunk and not some shrink or not some treatment center? You realize treatment centers have a 95% relapse rate, and we, when we follow the instructions in this book with a sponsor, I will tell you this, and it sounds arrogant and bold, but it's true. You get a drunk walking through this book, the drunk who's desperate, we have a 100% recovery rate. See, when I get drunk, because I didn't want this, and I'm still in self-will, and I'm not done. When you get the drunk who's desperate, where desperation screams louder than the ego, and they show up to your doorstep and say, I will do anything, and continue doing anything, and someone walks them through the book, whether it's line by line or assignments, but goes through this book, that person is done. They will experience permanent sobriety day at a time. That's for free. Treatment centers charge you $30,000, so you come back again and do it again. That's the great thing about Alcoholics Anonymous. That alone doesn't make sense, that it's not profit-driven. It says, my next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. So I enter the world of the Spirit. It doesn't say hang out. It says, I have to do something. My next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. Well, how do I do that? By reading more literature? By going to more meetings? It helps. But getting right with God, that I need to have a prayer life, a time of communing with God, to surrender, to submit to this power. I'm willing to live on your terms, not mine. I live for you, I die for you. I'll go where you want me to go. I'll do what you want me to do. I will say what you want me to say at all costs. Here's what I've experienced many times. In helping God's kids, Marion says this all the time, help God's kids and God will help you. There's inconveniences, you're met with resistance, people have taken shots, all sorts of stuff. You're at a job where no one, you're unappreciated, you get fired for doing your job, things like that. And you're saying, is this really worth it? Am I really doing this? There's people in my home group who revere me and revile me. I mean, what is this really all about? And then you look back and you have 30 sponsees who have lives that you've sponsored. And that's not because the power from me, but it's the power that's within me to pass that power on. Like all of us in this room. You look back and you say, oh my God. Yeah, it was worth it. My God was crucified to a cross. Was it worth it? Yes. I'm sure he wasn't happy about it. I go through stuff, I'm saying, what is this about? And I got the drunk calling me, depending upon me to get him through the night. That's not me being powerful. It's that power within me that makes me seem powerful, makes us seem powerful, and we are when we're together. I was working the other day. I was painting in suede shoes and expensive pants. This was a sight. And I looked around this place. And Ryan was sitting next to me. And the work is there. The clients were the clients. But the work is there. Every worker in the place. I either sponsored or I remember them when they first came in and I was able to help them. And they all got on with their lives. They're all doing wonderful. I went 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There's people I've been able to sponsor. And again, this has nothing to do with me being powerful. This is what God and AA does. Who own companies today. Who are self-supporting through our own contributions, have families today. Some have gone through hard times and did it sober. I got a message on social media earlier about a guy I helped a few years ago, went back up to Massachusetts, and he told me he's got 3 years sober. He was texting me, Facebooking me to tell me thank you. That's the power we get in Alcoholics Anonymous. We've entered the world of the Spirit. Next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime. I continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Very similar questions in 4. Very similar questions in 11. And the questions we have here. It's about taking a mirror up to me and seeing, where am I doing? Where am I missing the mark? How am I doing? Resentment's the number one offender because I'm sober while I can't accumulate that. No resentment's acceptable, all are unacceptable. But it doesn't say I'm going to be immune to resentments or fear or selfish and self-centeredness. Sometimes I think I'm kind and I'm really selfish. Sometimes I think I'm being humble, I'm really prideful. And I don't see that till I go to paper. Sometimes I'm saying, how could you do this to me, until I go to paper and I see how I set the ball rolling. I need to come back to you and make amends for that. And the street is clear. There's transparency between the soul and the head. Usually it's blocked and I run off the head. I continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When, not if, but when these crop up, assuming that they're going to crop up because I'm broken, I'm flawed, that's my condition, and I will behave like a drunk. Self will take over. I will be quiet when I should be speaking and vice versa. I will get fearful. I will get territorial. I will get overprotective and I will caretake and so on and so forth. That's my condition. And I need to see that on paper. It says, when these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. This is so key, and usually it just gets overlooked. It says, we ask God at once. Meaning when it happens and I become aware, awareness, the greatest age of a change. Once I become aware, I'm hooked on a resentment. I'm fearful. I was just inappropriate. I just barked. I was just snubbed someone. I get that. That comes from the soul, not the head. I need to go to God immediately. When I have a resentment at 9 o'clock in the morning, I'm not waiting till later on to deal with it. I'm dropping to my knees, Father. Because the thing about resentments, it likes to get attracted to other resentments. The thing about living in self, I will forget about the consequences of tomorrow for the comfort of today. I turn my thoughts to someone I can help. I make amends quickly. If I've harmed anyone, again, quickly. So if I screwed up, I need to turn back to that person and make amends and make it right, not when it's good for me. See, this isn't about me living in a place of comfortability on my terms. This is about living along the lines of this book or God's will. Am I willing to be submitted to God's will? Am I willing to practice fidelity to God? Am I willing to be in line with God's will? Because if I'm not, I'm out of line with God's will and I'm running into me. Step 10 has been a great tree pruner for me. I'll tell you what inventory does. I was working at a place in Deerfield Beach a few years ago. And after the 2-year honeymoon of working there was over, it got really volatile. I need a job. I got bills to pay and I'm really not sure what to do. And I said, I need to resign and go somewhere else. And fear kept me there. Loyalty to people I work with kept me there. Lots of things kept me there, but I was just afraid of leaving because I didn't think I was good enough to work anywhere else. And what began to happen to me was, we were talking about this the other day, I began to walk very hunched over. I had chronic back. I have a bad back, but it became chronic back pain every day. Every single day, my stomach was not good. Every single day, all day long. Getting migraines, dizzy spells. This is me running the show. And what I was doing, writing inventory after inventory after inventory, and thank God I was writing inventory and calling a sponsor and just bleeding him to death on the same stuff over and over and continually submitting and submitting and submitting and submitting to God. And then something happened one day when I got to touch truth. There's only one truth. There's truth like you got to pay your taxes. There's truth like you have to pay your rent. There's truth like you have to eat good and exercise and things like that. But there is only one truth, the truth, godly truth. And that's what I need to be locked into. And when I finally started to do all this inventory and share it with my sponsor and push stuff aside, and I can stand in front of my creator, guess what happened? I walked into work with a resignation letter, head up and shoulder square, and I did it properly and left. You know what? I went to another place and before I am where I am now, and suddenly my back started to get better. My belly bothers me from time to time, but not like it did at this place in Deerfield Beach. The migraines went away. I start to feel uplifted. I start to feel inspired. And all it did was, it was like God saying, you see, when you come to me who are heavy and burdened, I will give you rest. The carpenter talks about this. I got to a place by writing lots of inventory and surrendering to God and discussion with the sponsor. I can't stress the importance of sitting with someone and sharing the inventory and willing to try something different. Exchange an old idea that doesn't work for something new that does. I went before my God and I said, Father, something like this, Father, I do not want to be involved in the business I'm anymore. I'm out. I don't care where you put me. I'll clean stables. I don't care. I do not want to do this. I was not afraid of where God was going to send me. That was a fear. It was removed. I don't care. I'll wash cars. My life, my well-being, and taking care of Marion was paramount rather than my comfortability. I didn't care. And I had absolute faith and trust that God would pick me up and place me somewhere else. And that was my prayer. I want out. Please take me out of here if it's your will. Here's what happened. God kept me in the industry I'm in because there's some things I do really well. I've approached it completely different. My sponsor reminded me, a month or so ago, he said, Peter, do you realize you have almost no inventory on work anymore? An occasional one. You have almost no inventory on any coworkers? An occasional one. Do you see the shift in the different attitude, how God has allowed you to acquire a better attitude about everything? I still worry about money. I still worry about my health, but I'm not consumed like I was a few years ago. It consumed me a lot. Money, money, health, health. Money, money, health, health, job. The undercurrent of disease and discomfort, and it would flare every once in a while. If I wasn't writing inventory, a double vodka would probably begin looking good right now. Because I'm an alcoholic. I drink. I'm not beyond that. So I turn in order to turn out. I turn in order to go out. Because if I don't turn in, I will go without. And then we have our 10-step promises. By the way, it says love and tolerance of others is our code. How could I practice love and tolerance running on self-will? I can't. I think I am. I need to be in line with God's will to even attempt to practice love and tolerance. That's our code in Alcoholics Anonymous. That doesn't mean I roll over and become apathetic about things, but love and tolerance. Later on, step 12, it says, but the new guy, remember they are very ill. That's love and tolerance. When little Johnny walks in here and is totally appropriate, love and tolerance, I teach him, but understand how sick they are. Love and tolerance of others is our code. You know, I'm 59 years old and I travel a lot on weekends. And I've been traveling for many years now, and my dad, you're traveling this weekend? Where are you going now? Did you get an aisle seat? Like I'm 12. Are you sitting in first class or coach? What time are you leaving? What time are you getting back? Are you connecting with your flights? How long of a layover? It's a deposition. You have enough money on you. Did they pay for it? You know, he does this whole questionnaire. What do I do with that? Holler at him? No. Hang up the phone, he'll come looking for me. Yes, Dad. Yes, Dad. Yes, Dad. Yes, Dad. Now, for the past few years, is Marion coming with you? She's not. How come? The trouble in paradise. He right away thinks trouble in paradise. So I have to explain that to him. Yes, Dad. Yes, Dad. I love you, Dad. That's what he does. Love and tolerance of others in my code is our code. We cease fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. Who am I fighting with in my head, inwardly? Who am I arguing with? Not outwardly. Just the dialogue in head while I'm sitting in a meeting. I don't like to speak. I don't like the group. I don't like this. People at work, people in Publix, wherever it might be. I cease fighting anything or anyone. Who am I fighting? Who am I wrestling with? At the end of the day, I can point to a lot of people. You know who I'm wrestling with? Me. And my mind's got me again. I'm wrestling with me, and my expectations are where my life should be. My delusional mind that says I should have this. And nowhere in there is that, how do I get more God? It's about reaching out there but never going in. Cease fighting anything or anyone, dash, even alcohol. And it's almost like an afterthought, because the problem they're going to tell me in a minute has been removed. I need to take a look at how am I doing throughout the day? How am I navigating through the day? Who am I fighting with? Who am I resentful with? What am I fearful about? What am I getting attached to? I should be attached to nothing and open to everything. And sometimes it goes the other way. How am I doing? Here's my experience. When I'm writing inventory, and I write a lot of inventory, and when I'm discussing my inventory, and I discuss a lot of inventory. And as I said earlier, Monday night's the work night. Monday night at 7 o'clock, I have a sponsor. His name is Mickey Musset. And that phone rings once, maybe twice, and he usually kids around and says, AA, can I help you? And then we go. And he expects to hear inventory from me. Where's your inventory? Now, there's been times, by the way. I remember one time, again, I was working in Deerfield Beach, and something happened with Marion, and I was livid. And I want to always step in front of the bullet, not only for her, but my friends. When I see my friends or my sponsees in pain, I want to jump in front of it. That's my default button. I'll jump in front of it. I'll take the hit. Well, sometimes you can't do that, because they don't learn to grow and becomes prideful after a while. But something had happened. I was beside myself, and I was trying to figure out how I can help her, and I was just the betrayal that was going on, and I sat in my car, and I didn't know if I was going to cry or punch something. And so, okay, God, what do I do? Call Mickey. And I sat in a car and had no inventory. As Mick, I have it immediately. It says we discuss it with someone immediately. Immediately means immediately. And I share with him what's going on. He says, okay, slow down. Let's pray. And he prayed with me over the phone. He says, okay, let's walk through this. Who are you resentful with? What happened? Let's take a look at what was affected in you. This is how I do my inventory. Okay, let's take a look at where you're at fault. As we're doing this, the situation, please understand, did not change. But I did. I started to breathe. The shoulders dropped. I wasn't feeling that I need to go hit something. And I realized that God knows better for me. God can see down the road than I can. And no matter what happens here, God is always going to keep me safe, protected, her safe, protected, and the rest of his kids safe, protected. And then I start to remember so many times in my life when I says, this is going to be bad. Oh, my God. You get to the other side and you see exactly why it took place. Live life forward. Understand it backwards. Thank God that happened this way. Thank God that happened this way. And the muscles get bigger, because my trust and reliance, my dependence, everything was about, Father, what do? Call a sponsor. That's why they're there. Cease fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, for by this time sanity will have returned. Now, back in step two, we talked about, come to believe that a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity. So I come in here, Looney Tunes. I opened up a can of soda before. I laughed to myself because it sounded like a can of beer. Now, if I was counting days, I would have said beer. I knew they drink in here. It would have been the trigger. Oh, no, I'm thinking about beer. I need to do 90 and 90 now because someone opened up a can of Coke. back in step two, it says, came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. It tells me, for by this time, in other words, by the time I get here, I've been given wholeness of mind. I've been given truth. I've been given God. God is thinking for me. I'm not thinking for me. God is operating through us, through me. Not me operating through me. That's the other guy. That's when I'm writing a lot of inventory. I'll seldom be interested in liquor. I mean, think about what they're telling us. When I got in here and on my way in here, everything was revolving around alcohol. It was drink. How much money you got in your pocket? Not 20 bucks. You count your money by how much you're going to buy. There was no checking account. There was no savings account. It was get booze now. Forget about later on. And who cares about what happened? Booze. Wake up, double vodka just to get the heart beating. And we continue. And the moral decline goes deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And I cannot believe I'm doing or sleeping with or behaving this way. But as long as there's a drink behind it, it's really okay. That says that starts to diminish. That I'm seldom interested in the thing that owned me for so long. That makes no sense to the mind. But in the spiritual dimension, what else would God do? But would flower us with love. See, when I'm getting my experience is this. When I'm standing in the sunlight of spirit, there's nothing other than love. And when we're like that, we give it to other people. And it could be, hey, have your fourth step done by tomorrow. Or it could be, I just hold you while you screen through another bad night. But something happens when we're embraced with that. We have to pass it on. And all it does is embellish. We're new people. We're walking different. Not perfect. Trust me, if you walk with me, you will see it's not perfect. But my Lord is a million times better and so far away from where it was. I haven't intentionally hurt anyone I can't remember. I'm sure I have. By just not saying hello, maybe, or missing someone in a hallway. Whatever it might be. But I don't plot when I get them. It's been removed. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. You know the other thing about waking up and living in a world of the spirit? Dishonesty, the intent to deceive someone. I don't do that. I don't have to tell you everything. I don't mean you guys, but I have to tell someone everything. Even our book says in a general way. But when someone asks me about something, God is maybe, even when I work, just put it out there. Here's what I observe. Not cruel. With a tender touch, whether it's right at you or not. That was very unlike me growing up in early AA, where I was worried about what I say, how you're going to take it. You may not like it. You're going to leave me. Oh, my God, I'm alone. Oh, my God, I'm going to die. So I will lie. That's not living in a world of the spirit. Waking up is reporting things as they are. Enlightenment is reporting things as they are. I'll seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, I recoil from it as from a hot flame. I react sanely and normally. Now watch this. It says, and we find that this has happened automatically. Now, I was told by loving people and caring people, and I'm sure it works for them, and I meant no harm. Think the drink through. Play the tape to the end. Keep it green. Remember the pain of yesterday. In other words, I'm going to use this broken mind to fix a solution, to fix a problem that it caused in the first place. But tells me this is going to happen automatically, meaning spiritual fitness. I'm not going that way anymore. It just shows up. I will see that my new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on my part. Again, it reminds me nothing about me. Going to meetings is not going to treat that, but God could and would if he was sought. And I'm giving you my personal experience with this. It's not about thinking through a drink because that problem has been removed. I haven't sat there and said, a drink would be nice right now. Oh my God, I got to run to a meeting. Thank the good Lord. In many, many years. Or a non-conference approved dry good. In many, many years. And to share with you how slippery this illness is. I've suffered since I'm a kid with this thing called, we didn't know what it was until a handful of years ago, called IBS. And I have these episodes. I'm sober a year and change. I don't think I was sober 2 years. And I was visiting my dad in New York, Staten Island, New York. And I'm having an episode. And it's just awful. It's just terrible. And I can't even straighten up. It's so bad. I don't know what to do because I don't have the medicine for it. And out of nowhere, I swear to God, out of nowhere, my mind said, a little bit of opiates right now, a bag of this would settle this, because it would. This is purely medicinal reasons. I'm going to cop a bag of dope, take it. The pain is so bad, it will go away. And then a prayer took me over. I didn't reach out for the prayer. The prayer took me over. Bill talks about this happening in Mayflower Hotel. A prayer took over Bill. And it was like, what? Where did that come from? I was dealing with this since I'm 5. Suddenly, oh, a bag of dope. And we'll do it for medicinal reasons. And then it went away. That's how sneaky this thing is. I will see that my new attitude has been given to me without any thought or effort on my part. It just comes. This is the miracle of it. I'm not fighting it. Neither am I avoiding temptation. I've been to weddings and things where liquor is being served, and I wasn't sniffing around. I wasn't looking at who's in and out of the bathroom. I was at a wedding for a reason. I stayed a certain amount of time, paid my respects, and out the door I go. By the way, if you're new and you go to a wedding, watch the wedding. Right around 11 o'clock, it changes. Uncle Joe is your best friend now. And Cousin Tommy's jaws in Philadelphia. Everything changes right around 11. That's your cue to good night. I'm not fighting it, neither am I avoiding temptation. I feel as though I'm placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. I have not sworn the stuff off. Now, here it is. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. It does not exist for us. The problem's been removed. It's been changed. Godliness has taken over. There's no room for alcohol. There's no room for alcoholic thinking. There's no room for alcoholic behavior, depending on how spiritually fit. Permanent sobriety. Quit drinking for good and all. These are quotes out of our book, words out of our book. Permanent sobriety. Quit drinking for good and all. Our last drink is done if I keep spiritually fit. So I write this inventory. Last thing. It says it's easy to let up on a spiritual program of action and rest on my accomplishments of yesterday. What I did yesterday. My laurels. My book tells me I'm headed for trouble if I do. Well, I've been doing good. I can coast for a while. I can put the car in neutral. But alcoholism is interesting because as I'm moving forward, it's always like right there. And if I slow down for a minute, I'll get hijacked. It's always in the hunt. It'll get me where I think I'm good. It'll definitely get me when the chips are down. So it's pursuing me, but so is God. I have a daily stay of execution that hinges on my spiritual condition. That's a clear-cut warning my book is. And here's my prayer. Every day is a day I must carry the vision of God's will into all my activities. All means all my activities. How can I serve you, Father? Your will, not mine, be done. Many times when someone upsets me, I mumble to myself, Father, your will, not mine, be done. Father, your will, not mine, be done. Because his will is always better than mine. Mine has a motive. Mine has an angle. Mine has an attachment, which creates more problems. And sometimes I want my will. I want my way. But then I remember you live life forward and learn it backwards. And every time I look back, God always had my best interest. God doesn't have stepchildren. Sometimes I want to argue with God and debate with God. Like, God, you don't see it the way I see it. This guy is a bad seed. You got to get rid of him. And then God says, no, go love him. I'll take care of the mess. I'll close with this. And I said this once before. My job is not to care for myself. It almost sounds radical. My job is not to care for myself. My job is to seek out God's will, period. And God will care for me. God will say, Pete, go exercise. Pete, go on a diet. Pete, get to the meeting. Pete, I will surround you with awakened spirits. I will surround you with sick and suffering to pass on your awakened spirit. I will care for you. You just follow me. How much more simple can this get? Seek God with the desperation of a drowning man, and he will feed the soul. And when the soul is fed, we come from the soul, and the soul wants to pass this on. And we're always in line with God's will. No one is like, oh my God, I want to drink today. I live in spirit, with inspiration because I'm now inspired. Huh? That's all I got. Peace.
Let's thank Peter one more time. All right, now I'm going to have Mike come up and give the secretary report.
I'm Mike, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I've asked Lorna to read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
Hi, everyone. I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic. My name is Lorna. 1940s-style big book sponsorship. From forward to second edition, Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried. Oh.
I apologize.
You said it would be short. I'm like, sorry. Okay, recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime, but we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered. Thank you.
''1940s-style big book sponsorship. From the forward to the second edition, Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% sobered up at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. I get a show of hands of recovered alcoholics. And is anyone in need of a sponsor tonight? Would you guys mind standing up so we can see who you are? Anybody who's open for sponsorship, please get with these folks. Let's see. Broward County Intergroup. If you guys are interested, they have, you can get tokens and stuff there to celebrate sobriety. There's a lot of volunteer opportunities. There's flyers on the back table if you're interested. I'm not ready. All right, AA's Got Talent, February 2019. If you're interested, there's flyers on the back table again. Gratitude dinner planning. If anybody's willing to volunteer for this, they're in need of support and volunteers. Again, you can. District 9's annual spaghetti dinner. It looks like they're trying to get volunteers for that as well. Alumni reunion and barbecue, Friday, October 19th. And fifth annual Gratitude Days, the Gulf Stream Group is November 9th at noon, the 10th, and Sunday, November 11th. We also have mugs, CDs, large print big books, little red books, and big book dictionaries for sale in the back if you're interested. We meet every Thursday starting promptly at 7:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. Also, anybody Monday night, our meeting, our big book study will be going on for Labor Day. So if you're looking for a meeting, we will be here. See you all next week.
We have tonight's sessions and all the past speakers online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night big book study. And those whom wish to thank tonight's speaker, please line up down the center aisle. And I hope I see you all next Monday or Thursday. Let's close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, it
Oh, when you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you, baby, baby. Yes, when you're laughing. When you're laughing, yes, the sun comes shining through. But when you're crying, you bring on the rain. Stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, baby. And I hope.
Everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine, let it shine, shine. just a light of mine. I'm gonna let it shine, let it shine, 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 let it shine. Out in the dark.
Thank you.